And welcome to Right Spoke Can Perspective on this Thursday episode. You know, we've got another candidate interview ready to go for you today, folks, because we've got elections coming up and we've got to make some tough decisions this year. We've got a lot of big races across the state. We're talking about a governor, the entire House of Representatives. We need some change in Washington State. We also have 5th Congressional District here in Eastern Washington up for grabs and a number of candidates that we got to pick from, like the candidate in the studio with us today and Terry Cooper, who is running for Congress. You can look her up at cooperforwa.com. We're going to jump into a conversation with her about public policy and her campaign for Congress. After inspiration.
Our inspiration today is trying to save ourselves. Many years ago, New York City launched a Stay Safe, Stay Put ad campaign to educate people on how to stay calm and be safe when trapped in an elevator. Experts reported that some trapped passengers had died when they tried to pry open the elevator doors or attempted exiting by some other means. The best plan of action is to simply use the alarm button to call for help and wait for emergency responders to arrive. The Apostle Paul spelled out a very different type of rescue plan, one to help those trapped in the downward pull of sin. He reminded the Ephesians of their utter spiritual helplessness, being truly dead in their sins. They were trapped, obeying the devil and refusing to submit to God. This resulted in them being the subject of God's wrath. But he didn't leave them trapped in spiritual darkness. And those who believe in Jesus, the apostle wrote, by grace have been saved. A response to God's rescue initiative results in faith. And faith means we'll give up on trying to save ourselves and call on Jesus to rescue us. By God's grace, being rescued from sin's trap doesn't originate with us. It's the gift of God through Jesus alone. Heavenly Father, we're so grateful that when we were trapped in sin and tried to save ourselves, that you initiated our rescue and sent a Savior to free us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Well, as a voter and a taxpayer, I often feel like I'm trapped in an elevator, and the only way to get out is to keep hitting that button, and it's called the button of elections. And it seems like we need to definitely have doors opening and all ends to let in some ideas that are going to change the trajectory you're on, because I don't know if we can all handle more inflation. And of course, our government is spending at a higher rate than inflation. It's growing like crazy, like our state budget has over the last decade, doubling, and it's crippling the people in this country. Taxes at the local level. It's just insanity. And I know that there was somebody that stepped into the elevator and hit every floor. And so we're going to take that ride. Ding. But I think it's time to get off of the ride. And we've got a person in the studio with us today that is a candidate for the 5th Congressional District in Terry Cooper. And I just want to do an introduction of her because you're the first time. This is the first time you've been on the show, right?
Yes.
Okay. So just tell the listeners, who's Terry Cooper? What have you done with your life? And maybe we'll get into the elevator escape later.
Okay. Terry Cooper. I'm currently the mayor for the city of Medical Lake. My career has been in criminal justice. So I had 25 years working in the court system as a court administrator. 17 of those years I sat on the bench as a court commissioner. So I took a test in 2002 at the prompting of my judge. I was the court administrator at the time. And he just kept prompting me, take this test. Tried to get me to go to law school. I said, can't afford it. I got 3 kids and I have to work, take care of my family. Been married 44 years. I have 3 kids, 11 grandchildren. That's part of my big why. But nonetheless, so I took that test and I did get a call from the state of Washington, the administrative office of the courts. It was a proxy test, little mini bar, studied all of the state law and Washington specific case law and things like that. Got the call. The call said, hey, not only did you pass the test, you passed with the highest score in the history of the test. And at that time, I had a high school diploma. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe there are some brains up there. And that set me on a course. My judge then did appoint me as a court commissioner. I went to work for Judge Greg Tripp in Cheney Municipal Court. He appointed me and gave me his full authority, and we shared the entire caseload for the next about 17 years. So it's been really a great career. Along the way, I saw that my little city was crumbling around my ears, tried to work with the administration, could not get anywhere, started a nonprofit with my sister, Jerry Johnson, and she and I set about setting up what does this city need, everything from economic development, tourism, saving the lakes, natural environment, all those kinds of things, and bringing all of the community together. That was really the goal. We ran that for about 7 years. The government really, the more we tried, the more they didn't like us. And there was really one person there. And understanding government, as I have from being in government for 25 years, it's like, I know how this works. I know who works for who and how to dismantle this. And the Lord gave me a scripture. And he said, the wise know how to scale this the wall of the city and bring down the strongholds in which they trust. And it's like, I know how to take this apart and put it back together again. So I did. And had never run for office before. Actually, I always said, I hate politics. I hate politicking. But what I really meant is just the dishonesty and selfish ambition and things that I saw that were just a turnoff to me about politicians. So I did. I ran and I beat the incumbent 64% and went inside. And I say I pulled one thread, the sweater unraveled, but we put it back together again. And it's beautiful. I mean, even with the fire. So then I was there for the fire of last summer, August 18th, and it was devastating. 240 homes, 55 in my city, and then right over the hill to Silver Lake there, 195 more homes, and then the Elk Road fire. So I mean, that's been the whole focus of my work for the last 7 months is helping people rebuild their lives. So we can get more into, you know, about me, but that gives you a bit of how I got where I am.
How you got there. Well, definitely this was a challenging year to be the mayor of Medical Lake. And that happened right about the time you do Fool's Run at Midnight, right?
April 1 is the Fool's Run. And so this was August, but same season.
And I just have to bring that up. I remember as a kid, I went out for a couple of the fun runs there in Medical Lake and, you know, kind of getting trained. I think I was in the mood because those were years I did Bloomsday.
Oh, nice.
I don't find myself in the mood as much these days. But Fool's Run at Midnight, it was anyway. a fun event, and it really introduces a lot of people to Medical Lake. So that's a nice, you know, economic development, I guess, advertising for the city. And so this challenging year with all the fires, you kind of saw the different aspects of how money comes into municipal governments after an emergency and FEMA situations, because they finally did declare a disaster there.
Yeah, they did. So initially, it's interesting. The public is going to want to know this, and this is one of the reasons that I want to get to D.C. It's true in Washington State, and it's true at the national level. Wildfires are not the same. They're not classified the same type of natural disasters as you have for tornadoes, hurricanes, floods. Those are natural disasters. We just have wildfires. So when you have a natural disaster, the government understands it's a public duty to clean up the toxic debris. When you have a wildfire, they say, call your insurance company. Mm-hmm. And so that didn't work. So right off the bat, I contacted the governor and I'm like, do you realize that Medical Lake sits on a shallow aquifer? We sit on a basalt shelf. We have two lakes. All of this runoff is going to go into the soil. It's going to go into our streams and lakes. And then it's headed for the Spokane River and the aquifer. And this is highly concentrated toxic debris. When you have a house that's burned down, every chemical, all the plastics, everything that's in your house is in this concentrated pile.
Well, and it also is chemically changed with heat, you know? You know, looking at science, if we're going to look at the real science, you got to get some bulldozers out there, clean that stuff up, and get it to somewhere it's not going to be leaching into water supply.
Absolutely. You know, the biggest risk, there's a whole list of chemicals. The biggest one was the asbestos, of course, that they're concerned about. You have to roll that up in this thing called a burrito. But
the asbestos isn't going to affect the water. Asbestos is more of an airborne dust issue.
It is. But you couldn't touch anything until you tested for asbestos. So people were kind of dead in the water, if you will. So anyway, I called the governor and he did. He agreed with me, which was great. He released $1.25 million. It went through state emergency management and then it comes to Spokane County. But every time that it, and then there were about three or four different pots of money, but every time it comes through a regulatory department, it gets changed. It has a contract. They decide what it's going to be spent on. And then it gets more and more narrow as it goes. And then you have this reimbursement process. Well, who's going to pay for it first? And so it was about 6 months really before a person saw a dollar. It really was. They worked on some contracts. They worked on case management contract and things. And I don't want to be critical. It's just that the state of Washington does not pre-fund recovery work, and they do not do the toxic debris cleanup. Asbestos testing is huge, though,
is they create extra regulation while you're waiting to find your way out of the ashes and make it so you can't heat your home in the winter. It's one of the things I noticed they did in getting rid of the ability to do natural gas. So all those homeowners, if they didn't get their permits in time, are going to have to, you know, heat with, I don't know, solar radiation or something.
Well, it costs so much more. So once that energy code passed, and I was in Olympia contending for that, Mike Vols did help write a bill, and we did take that to the legislature. And the bill was saying, it's Bill 1899, talk about making the sausage. But anyway, it started off, Bill 1899 was all it said was, can there be an exception for the people at total loss of home? That they can rebuild back at the current code and not have to have this additional $40,000 to $60,000 in costs, that they have to have the electrical hookup for their electric car that they don't own, and, you know, all of these other things that are required. No natural gas, no propane, no. And so it was just a super burden. Everybody was underinsured. Property, you know, property values have doubled. The cost of rebuilding, materials have doubled. All of this happened.
Well, and all the regulation for cleanup as well. I mean, all this stuff coming from government.
Everything just compounded. They couldn't get that passed. What they did, and it was an exception, would have been for about 100 people, right, at the end of the day, because a lot of people were already rebuilding by the time we got there.
Well, this is a good example, though. Go ahead.
You would think that there would have been complete bipartisan support on that. Yeah. We're talking a very small population that were directly affected by a natural event that we happen to have in Washington every single year. Uh-huh. You would have think that they all would have been clamoring to vote yes.
You would have thought those people. You would have thought so. But what happened when it got in committee? It got hijacked by Mr. Riccielli.
Marcus Riccielli.
He took that and he took that language out. And he turned it into an energy bill that got funded at 1.something million.
And he can say that and be fine with it because he's already got natural gas heated his house, and as well as the other legislators. I mean, they'll release more wolves over here, but they don't want us to be able to get to a warm house, because the wolf that's huffing and puffing and blowing all our houses down really is government regulation. Because this is an example that you can take to the federal government. Mm-hmm. From the state level, I look at it and I see, okay, we're going to do something. And it would have been good for a bill to exempt those people that lost their homes in fires. But what if you're that one person that lost your home in a fire next year, or the three people next year? And then also designating fires for FEMA. Why is the Northwest left out? When I talk to somebody down in Florida, they say we're crazy for living up here. They think snow is a natural disaster.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, so why not have fire as a natural disaster? It's obviously true. We should. And I think that looking at this whole experience that you've gone through with the natural disaster stuff in Medical Lake, all the different people that you've worked with, you see how just recently the government really regulates itself out of being effective in helping people. And then the people are also standing there looking at the ashes, nowhere to live for 6 months.
Yeah, so we're on 8 months now. Houses are being rebuilt. But I'll tell you that it's been a painful process. I have spent so much time working with state emergency management, local emergency management. These are good people. They all want to do the good thing, but there's so many layers of bureaucracy and rules. You end up really, it's just about following the rules, not about serving the people.
Well, you just have way too many people that you have to check with and deal with their agency, and then that agency's policy is different than the other agency's policy. People that have never met each other from agencies and had to work together across regulatory lines. It's a disaster that our government administration has created, and it's our politicians that have allowed these agencies to be empowered. All this regulation, the administrative code, I don't know why our legislative bodies, whether it's local, state, or federal, haven't stepped in and said, wait a minute. The Constitution doesn't give you this authority. It gives Congress this authority. And we've never passed a law that says that you can do all of these things, right? So we've got to have some checks and balances. And that was worked into our constitutional structure. And it was in Congress's hands. And I know a lot of folks out there care about who the president is, but the president is the weakest political power at the federal level other than our military. It is in the hands of Congress, and we currently have a Congress, almost in my life, and I guess maybe more than my life, that have abdicated their responsibility when it comes to spending money. I mean, look at the money we're spending. We are bankrupting our country, because now we have even both political parties really recognizing that we are in a financial an immigration and a foreign policy. I mean, we are going insane in all these directions, and we're not seeing folks that are are really turning this ship around. So again, with Terry Cooper, she is running for 5th Congressional District Congress. Look her up, cooperforwa.com. That's cooperforwa.com. That's cooperforwa.com. We need to talk about foreign policy. We need to talk about those foreign entanglements, our finances. We are going bankrupt as a country. And we have this administrative state that seems like, I have my cell phone sitting next to me, so FBI gets to hear the interview too, apparently. And so, you know, this is one of these things where government is just totally out of control, but it's not doing its basics. Like my city government, I don't want them telling me how my family should live their lives. I want them to fill potholes. The federal government, I want them to secure the border and not start wars every 10 minutes. So how do you feel about those issues on the on the federal front? I know we talked about the fires and the federal government issue with designation of natural disasters, and people pay the insurance. They should be seeing it. But so let's jump into the broader public policy.
There's so many things that you just said there that I'd love to jump into, and I know we won't have time. But
I don't start actual fires. Just sounds like it on the radio.
Well, I appreciate you. So let's go to the power of the administrative state. So something that's really important to me when I was sitting on the bench, I love the law, rule of law, constitution. My father did 2 tours in Vietnam. He's a decorated war hero. And in my mind, although Congress never really declared war, right? That's a whole nother thing. We won't.
Well, we haven't declared war
since World War II.
Since World War II.
Yeah.
But we've been at war, I think,
continuously.
More than we've not been at war. Countless lives, foreign, as well as our own troops, and trillions of dollars.
And more people die in those kind of wars because they're by resolution. We make agreements on how we can engage in war.
Or we just pay other militaries to kill the people, right?
It's messy. It's messy. Anyway, that's a whole...
It is messy, but where is the Constitution?
Correct.
Every single congressional member, in my view, that's voted to fund anything that kills anyone abroad was in violation of their oath of office because they were funding something that they did not declare the parameters of what the executive branch is supposed to do.
Yeah,
most people don't even know how government works anymore because we just see the press. The president runs everything because now we have
it's
a king.
True.
And then we have a legislature that wander around, do fundraisers, and some do something. But it's really power is in the Congress.
And the power really is in the Constitution. So the 3 branches of government, equal. 3 equal branches of government, right? Good. So, yeah. So let's talk about the administrative state. So Constitution, 3 equal and separate branches of government, right? And it's checks and balances by design. Our Constitution, I believe, is divinely inspired. I don't think there's ever been a document like it, nor there will ever be again. We'd be foolish to open it up and try to amend it because it's too crazy right now, and we need to keep it.
We're not following the one we got,
it.
Right?
We don't follow the one we have, but they want to really change it in a real serious way. There's a real effort for that. But nonetheless, so the 3 branches of government. So right now, the power of the purse is supposed to be in the House of Representatives. And they're supposed to, Congress supposed to be making the decisions on the budget, war, impeachment, all these things. But we see now that the power is with the executive branch. The executive branch has overreached, and that is a violation of the Constitution. And they are running the budget. We discontinued resolutions, these continued kicking the can down the road as we keep going trillions and trillions of dollars into debt. So every time this budget comes, you know, it's bigger and more bloated than it was before, but it's never been actually brought in. It's supposed to come to the House. It's going to be dialed in. They approve it, and they are supposed to tell the other 2 branches how much money they get to spend. But what happens, they keep creating bureaus and commissions and departments, and it just continues to grow.
Studies, and they just, the spending, I mean, the COVID thing, everyone was like, oh, okay, we got to do an emergency thing. But since then, we're still spending the same amount of money. We used to blame presidents when, oh, that president got us, you know, almost $1 trillion in debt in 4 years. We're spending $1 trillion in less than 100 days now. Every 90 or so days, we're spending $1 trillion. We're bankrupting our country. And I can go years back, and there was a representative that looked line by line at different things our federal government funds. And the one that always stuck out to me that was just the most absurd was funding universities for all sorts of different studies that we don't need to know the results of anyway. But the one was how Japanese quail, if they're more sexually active on cocaine. And you think about this stuff, and you're like, we're funding this? And there's just a plethora of garbage that we're funding while we bankrupt our grandchildren.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And so the legislative branch is supposed to have that power of the purse, right? The executive branch is supposed to carry out, there's to execute what Congress tells them to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the judicial branch is supposed to be fair and impartial, and nobody's supposed to be influencing the judicial branch. And so we see that the executives are overreached constantly, and they're really running all of the branches of government.
I don't see Congress stopping it, though. So Congress has got the power to stop that.
That's the problem. Right? They do. You know, we've got to get enough people rallied around truth and justice, and how do we come together and say, no, we're not, you threaten that you're going to shut the government down. So we have to just keep with these continued resolutions, but really we have to come together as the Republican Party. Hopefully we'll still have the majority, but hold their feet to the fire and just call their bluff. No, go ahead and shut down government. Everybody can go home again, just like they did on COVID. This time they're just not going to get paid. And, you know, until we can get a budget, you cannot, you know, we're not going to continue a resolution. You'd be surprised at how quickly they'll start, you know, they'll scream and yell and blame it on everybody. But,
well, the money laundering has got to end. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, I think there was a natural gas, liquefied natural gas station that we put up in Afghanistan for, I think it was a couple $1 billion. And they had nothing that ran on liquid natural gas. It was just, you know, dumping money out the window. And I think that it's not just the money side of it, but we're also, and a lot of folks have already figured this out, we're funding both sides of these wars now. We're sending money to Iran, then we send money to Israel, then we send money to Gaza, then we send money to Ukraine, tons and tons of dollars there, but we're also pushing people to buy Russian energy because we're shutting down energy here. So all these policies are conflicting. It's like we're at war with ourselves.
And that is by design. Right. It's everything everywhere all at once. And it's to weaken faith, family and freedom. So you look at the Communist Party, right? The CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. They will, and they've published this, and they say there's three things in America that we can't overcome: faith, family and freedom. But because they have no respect for any of those, faith, family or freedom, you are nothing but an asset to be used by us. We own you and we'll decide who lives and dies and who gets locked up. And so there's no respect there for human, no human dignity at all. But so in their culture, in the Communist Party culture, not the Chinese people, the poor Chinese people, but in their government culture, their communist culture, they say, but if I can come along next to them and I can do something to weaken faith, family, or freedom, then I'm stronger. They know they can't defeat that, but that's why we have to contend for faith, family, and freedom. They cannot overcome God. They cannot overcome the human soul. They can't overcome the dignity. You know, but that's what they try to do. Take our dignity, take our life, take our freedom, flood the borders with drugs, flood the borders with 10 million.
Well, they've already got immigrants. Most of our money, right? Since everything's we made gave, in China, you know, we get who, more production.
Excuse me, but who in their right mind would have your enemy make your pharmaceuticals that are supposed to keep you well? Who, how did that happen?
Was that like 85% of our pharmaceuticals are made in China?
I woke up one day and went, my enemy's making my blood pressure better.
I think about that with everything. I mean, you know, we had we had an old administration that did the cash for clunkers. All that good American steel that got recycled didn't stay in the United States. It went to China. They added a whole bunch of carbon and different kinds of pot metals and things to it, and then sent it back to us in trinkets that weren't going to last.
Spot on. Yeah.
And so we're losing, or we've already lost.
We gave them our intellectual property. We gave them all our manufacturing. And so now we owe them money.
Well, how about a rule in Congress that says if you have a multinational corporation, you cannot have members of the Chinese Communist Party on your board.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a requirement in China. So China, the Communist Party, gets to control their corporations. Why can't we put in, well, for one, we should tariff also. If you want to buy Harley Davidson in China, it's like over $100,000.
Yeah.
But you can buy the Chinese stuff here. We're not tariffing the stuff. So
it's so true.
We've already basically thrown the white flag up. We don't need jobs in manufacturing. We don't need to protect ourselves economically. So we've lost the economic war with China. Now we're losing 100,000 people a year from the fentanyl war that I guess the British trained the Chinese how to do.
Yeah. So this is all stealth wars, right? Mm-hmm. How to win without firing a shot. And that's what they're doing.
Right? Yeah. Art of war.
And so that's exactly what's happening. It's textbook. This should not come as a shock. And Stealth Wars also talks about it, and there's some other great books out there. But the Chinese themselves, you know, this is by design. And it's the Marxist communist, textbook. It really is. It used to seem kind of weird to say that, right? Nobody actually would say that on the radio or say that on TV, but it's so blatant and so obvious right now.
I started saying the word Marxist in political circles And in Olympia, when I would go to Olympia over a decade ago, and people told me, that's like foul language.
Right.
You shouldn't be talking like that. And you know why they didn't want me to talk like that? Because they were making deals with the Marxists.
Right. Well, and on this, in Seattle, they had a play just a day before yesterday. All these little kids, whatever, they had outfits that were red, white, and blue. They had to shut down the show because people in the audience said it's terrifying to us that they have clothes on that look like the United States
flag. American flag, right?
The American flag. So now somehow that's the threat. I'm frightened now. And all this propaganda, you know, it just comes from somewhere. It's by design. It didn't just happen overnight, but we got a better
Department
wake
of
up.
Education, the federal level, was created in the 80s, right?
Yep.
And we've been training our children in self-hatred of our country, because we used to be a patriotic country. We used to care about our fellow man. Yeah. We took care of our children. We took care of our families. We actually had families. Right now, we've got just broken homes all over this country from drug abuse. We basically have funded the single family home in this country. We've destroyed the family with our own welfare system. So it's not just, it's like Sun Tzu art of war on ourselves.
Yeah. So there's three things that I'm thinking about when I think about running for Congress, and that would be agriculture, education, and the military, right? They've all been, they're all under attack. All of those things are foundational to our safety, especially in Eastern Washington, Fairchild Air Force Base, all of our military presence. We love them. We need them. We need to strengthen the military. We need to fund them, and we need to get them back to defending this country, like the border, right? Close the borders. Get out the people that...
Now why couldn't we use our military in... we have an invasion going on.
We need to.
Why couldn't we use our military? It's made no sense to me this whole entire time why we can't use our actual military to defend the homeland. I thought that was kind of part of the deal.
Yeah, I think so too. But even the people at the border, the agents, they're told they can't keep people out. They just get to process them in. So this is by order. This is by order from the federal government. And so that's a federal agency. So all these agencies, but yeah, securing the border, tracking down the people. And they're like, oh, that's really expensive. Track everybody down and make them get out. I don't care. It's cheaper than climate change.
I don't think that's very expensive. If I have to pay my property taxes, I know there's a politician that collects them that will kick me out of my house if I don't pay them.
Right. And so it's our money. And if we decide that we want to use it to secure our borders, we should. And we need to process these people out. We have this nice pipeline of people who've been waiting 10 years to get in this country the legal way. These are good, hardworking people that want to come in, have opportunity, you know, for the American dream for their kids. And I'm all for that. Department of Education, I want to get in there because I know it's a disaster. We have completely
need a Department of Education?
No, but you have to get in there to dismantle it. And so, you know, you have to understand it before you can say where the boundary should be, because that won't happen overnight. We're pretty entrenched in that, right?
Absolutely. Well, and I think we're entrenched in way too many things. I don't know why the federal government needs to be involved in college. I mean, obviously, we're not going to be other than just paying off loans, that sounds like is what the president wants to do. We've got to hold, I think, the executive branch accountable, because obviously there's already laws in protecting our border. Those aren't being followed. And I think there's some fiscal responsibility that needs to occur. I think we are, or our government's supposed to be accountable for the money that we spend. Where's the money going?
So
we lose $1 trillion in the Pentagon. Yeah.
So go back to the administrative state, right? So we create all these bureaus and departments and commissions and boards and things, and then we fund those through this continued resolution budget. And so just recently they passed, the House of Representatives passed a law that said those departments can't spend more than $100 million without it coming before the eyes of an elected official.
$100 million.
And I'm like, there's a lot of money moving around and it's funding all of these things. We have no idea.
That's why those bills are so long and you can't read them, because if somebody had sat down and read them, you'd be like reading parts of departments that were put together back in the 60s for technologies. We probably still have people that are keeping track of tape recordings.
Likely.
Yeah, likely.
Yeah.
But we're out of time because this is not a tape recording.
Thank you.
We're digital. We can only cut, you know, obviously we're not going to be cutting physical tape, but we're going to cut off the conversation for today. But I hope to have you back, because definitely need to talk more about how out of control our federal government has become, how it's affecting us locally here in Eastern Washington. I know you're going to have a chance to talk to people across the area, not just here in Spokane, but in other areas in Eastern Washington, north and south. I think there's going to be some differences when you talk about agriculture, China buying up farmland.
Yes.
We are in a crisis. We're at war. but we're just twiddling our thumbs, acting like nothing's going on. But elections occur. Folks, look into Terry Cooper, cooperforwa.com. Remember, we are listener supported. We are going to bring you tons of candidate interviews so you can share with friends, get people informed, get them out to vote. We need people to turn in their ballots in droves. All that being said, we'll be with you folks again tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are sponsored by Right Spokane Perspective LLC and made possible by advertisers you hear and contributions from listeners like you.